RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Always look forward to this time of the week. It's our political panel on a Friday morning, and here we are again to chew the political stories and related to that stories from the past week or so. Welcome to our panel, Ro Edge from Save Women's Sport Australasia. She's back with us. Hi, Ro.
Hi, Paul. Lovely to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. Everything all right with you? Because of what Chris Bishop, he's advised, I think we've talked about that, to Raylene Castle, so there's that.
Yep, things are going the right direction. We just need to keep pushing.
Marie Buskey, great to have you.
Hey, great to be here, Paul.
Boy, you've been, I listened to the interview.
Yeah.
My golly. Oh, my God.
And
that's
to be honest,
all I can say.
Yeah, and I mean, that was just the cliff notes, to be honest, with Alistair. There was so much more. Yeah. But, you know, it's nice to be able to talk about it, which we haven't been able to do.
Has anything offset that recently?
Yeah. What? I had the proudest mummy moment ever yesterday, because part of the reason we did what we did was to set an example for our boys, and we're very proud of them. And I've often talked about how they're both at school together, and we've got them at a faith-based school, and they had their final leavers mass, because our oldest is year 13 off to tertiary education next year. So it was a very special time for him. And then his younger brother, who's only a year behind him, got announced as a prefect. So we're proud of them. Yeah, very proud of them. Fine young men.
Well, that comes with responsibility, being a prefect.
It does. It does. And I hope we've set an example for him. And he sees that. And he's been with us. Both the boys have stood by us on this journey. This hasn't just been their dad alone. This has been all of us. And, you know, they've come to protests with us. They've seen the whole thing. And I have huge hope. I have huge hope on all of these things, all matters cultural and ideological. And, you know, there's a lot resting on these young men's shoulders, but I have faith that they
we need
are
good
going
men. We need good men going forward, as they say.
We absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of good men, Bob McCoskrie. Hi, Bob.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Paul, Marie, Ro. Nice to be here.
Hey, Bob.
What's been happening, Bob?
Well, I've just been monitoring what's going on in New Zealand, and the place is still going down the toilet. So, you know, it's been a typical week, which I think we're talking about.
We might as well pack up and go home, because it was like that last week, just rerun last week.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's kick off. New Zealand, capital of the world for herpes. I'm reading from Bob McCoskrie's piece, big blog piece. And the headline is Graham Henry, Ashley Bloomfield and other famous Kiwis front for new herpes campaign. Isn't that an STD, herpes?
No, it's a sexually transmitted infection, because that sounds a lot nicer. You're not allowed to say disease anymore. Disease means that it might be to do with behaviour. Infection sort of means that you accidentally got it.
And no sort of accountability, just, oh dear, these things
happen. Well, that's really what the campaign is about. So the Herpes Foundation have decided that they want to remove the stigma from having herpes, which is a little bit like that discussion we had recently about removing the stigma from paedophilia as well. Not that I'm equating the two, but it's just this.
I hope not.
No, it's just this narrative around changing the language to basically cater for certain types of behaviour. So what the Herpes Foundation have done is, and what they haven't pointed out in their health advice, but I've tried to in the Substack and McBlog that I've done, is to say that what they don't acknowledge is that there's two types of herpes. Mm. There's the oral herpes, which according to the Johns Hopkins University in the United States, up to 80% of American adults can have, which is the cold sores around the mouth, and you can get those as a child. And then there's genital herpes, and that's the one that about 1 in 6 people aged over 14 may have, and that is exclusively through sex. But so what they're doing is they're comparing apples and oranges in some ways, because they're comparing a type of herpes, which many people get, including children, with a sexually related disease or sexually transmitted infection. And in fact, what the research shows is that you're more likely to get it if you've got 5 or more sexual partners. And so
5 or more?
five or more.
I don't think that's all at the same time, Paul.
I wasn't thinking that, but
he's disappointed.
That's like promiscuous behaviour.
That was his height of his morning. He was trying to imagine five sexual partners all at the same time.
I knew you lot would drag this right down.
Give me a break. Give me a break.
Oh, look, there was one comment that Bloomfield made, and I just cracked up. Let's make New Zealand the best place in the world to have herpes.
Yeah.
I mean, how about we make New Zealand the healthiest place in the world so no one gets herpes in the first
place?
Well,
that's make America healthy again.
You only get it if you are run down anyway. That's when the infection comes up. So, yeah.
Where's the big stigma? I haven't heard anyone really talking about this. And what about the lineup of people, the endorsing lineup of people? Any comments?
Well, they've done pretty well to get Sir Ashley Bloomfield and also to get Sir Graham Henry and Sir Buck Shelford involved. I mean, most of the other names you probably don't know, but I mean that's pretty good. But it's a pretty corny campaign, and basically what they're trying to do is they're trying to say that the stigma and the shame associated with herpes is actually the problem. It's not the virus. That's what Ashley Bloomfield says, and he says that 30% of all Kiwis diagnosed with herpes experience depressive or suicidal thoughts, and therefore we need to make New Zealand the best place in the world to have herpes so they don't have hurty feelings. But the actual Herpes Foundation themselves admit that some people will find it hard when they get the infection, when they get herpes. In fact, let me just read from the website. It says, "It is normal to feel upset and distressed, as with any new diagnosis of a medical condition. Remember that herpes doesn't discriminate." Well, of course, that's fake news because it does discriminate based on sexual activity.
X5.
So, I mean, the reason I've highlighted it is that not only is it a corny, dumb campaign with some pretty grotesque stuff in it as well, especially some of the content aimed at young people, which you can see in my commentary. But it is also so fluffy that it fails to tell the truth. It basically says that getting herpes is like having a zit, and yet it mentions nothing about the soreness, the complications, the effect on your sexual life, the blisters, the flu-like symptoms. You know, they say, oh, no, it's the stigma that's the nastiest part of it. And it's simply normalizing basically unmitigated narcissistic sexual activity without consequences. I think if you are going to go down that track, at least be able to tell people the truth.
It has some echoes of the transgender issue, doesn't it? With the what did Bloomfield say about people feeling suicidal and
the suicide trope. Which
exactly.
And actually, that another story which we haven't got on our list is the fact that there was a really important article in the New York Times saying that, in fact, researchers have found that the suicide trope actually doesn't work. That they found that people coming in for transgender treatment, their mental health didn't improve. And in fact, when they came in, their mental health was actually quite okay. The problem was they didn't publish the research because it didn't go with the narrative, because the whole narrative is that the mental health is so bad that if you don't transition them and put them on puberty blockers, they're going to commit suicide. So better to have a live daughter than a dead son. So the suicide trope, if you add the Swedish study and the Finnish study, all the research coming out now, and so what it's actually showing is that they're hiding that kind of information. That's the problem with the Herpes Foundation campaign, is that they're trying to give a nice perception of it and make New Zealand the capital of the world for herpes, which I'm not quite sure.
That we keeps want. The foundation in work, isn't it?
Well, that's right. These foundations last only because, and by the way, taxpayer paid for this campaign because the taxpayer funds the Te Whatu Ora actually funds the Herpes Foundation. So thanks, team, for paying for this corny, weak, factually incorrect campaign.
All right. And good to know, to note again, that there are two sorts.
Yes.
So the ones around the mouth, don't get too worried about those.
No.
Well, I mean, look, I've been someone that suffered from type 1 herpes, which is the and you don't get them around the mouth. I'm afraid this is going to sound awful. I get them around the mouth, nose, ears, in the mouth. They really are awful, and you can be susceptible to them genetically. My family have always suffered from them, and they're not fun. It's not a fun thing to have, and you can feel quite feverish and it's not enjoyable at all. But as Ro said before, you know, stress is one of the key indicators with it. So you need to sort of manage that. For me, it's always a bellwether. You know, if I get a cold sore, that tells me that I need to take a little bit of self-care.
Button off.
Yeah, but it's like all of these things, is that it's that normalization. When you take the type one away, and then what they're trying to do, I think, is to loosely jam the two of them together to literally soften the effects.
Well, aren't they promoting promiscuity fundamentally?
Well, I wonder whether the whole reason that this has come up is that they've had nurses in clinics and they've got these people coming in with infections who've got no idea of what's going on. And, you know, let's face it, they're teaching them about all sorts of other forms of sex that, you know, even as a grown-up I didn't know about, and they're now teaching them
at schools. On the side of dairies.
But they're certainly not teaching them about these sorts of things, which is just ridiculous. I mean, the Herpes Foundation would have been better to actually have partnered up and say, look, you know, these are what these sexually transmitted infections are like. These are the consequences. When I did good old sex ed, we got sat down and literally had the absolute bejesus scared out of us.
How about try not to have five partners? Yeah. Just hang back a bit, you know?
And it's also the other effects long term as well. You know, when these kids think that there's no consequence, you know, you can just go out there and it's just completely consequence free. Well, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch, is there? So, no.
Okay. All right, moving on. We had Jan Rivers from GenSpec on before this chat, talking about the Midwifery Council telling the Regulatory Review Select Committee that they've reviewed the new scope of practice and intend to consult on it again, Ro.
Oh, look, it's just a nightmare. I know you've interviewed Jan and quite a few others. I think you interviewed midwife Deb Hayes.
A while back. Yeah. You did the petition.
So she did the petition and she got thousands of signatures on it calling for an investigation into the Midwifery Council, because on their scope of practice, they removed the words woman and babies. I mean, how can you have midwifery services that ignore the people, the very people that they're there for? So, you know, I think they spent 4 years removing us and erasing us and hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they ignored, I think there was something like 90.8% opposition to it during consultation, ignored all of that and put out this ideologically driven dribble that is, it's just appalling. And so it sounds like the select committee are basically seeing if they can self-correct their scope, and hopefully they do, but if not, it needs to go.
It doesn't stand legally because it doesn't address an individual.
No.
Because the word whānau was substituted in for women, and whānau is really distributed.
Yeah,
and encompasses everything you can ever think of, you know.
Yeah, and the midwife has always been there for the woman. Like, that's her sole focus is for the woman. And if the whānau can have a say, then the woman's right to birth in the way that she wants to birth is taken away. Yeah, I think Sarah Henderson wrote a really brilliant piece on her Substack last year about this, and she said, the Midwifery Council of New Zealand's capitulation to gender ideology is a perfect case study for future students of ideological institutional capture in the early 21st century. You know, and that will be on the records, right? All of these people, all of these government departments that have allowed themselves to be captured so terribly, just like Sport New Zealand as well, we're all going to look back on them one day and go, what the hell were you thinking?
And also, I mean, this is a classic case of it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah,
there's the previous scope was fine.
Perfect. Yeah, it had worked perfectly for 2 decades without issue. Yeah.
And that's because it achieved a threshold of legality in the specification of the words used.
Yeah.
Whānau doesn't meet that threshold because it's not an individual, which is the whole point of it, so...
The other thing I was just going to say is that for some who haven't seen the new amended revised scope of practice from 27th of September, it refers mothers have been reduced to the term individuals, however they may identify, who are capable of childbearing.
Yeah, well,
I mean, it's just, but see, this is another example of the language of manipulation.
It is.
So it's taking something negative and taking something negative like herpes and trying to make it positive and remove the stigma. Then you take something positive and natural and biological like mother and reduce it to this woke term about someone who's capable of childbearing. And, of course, I don't know if you've seen, but one TVNZ have got a documentary on next week about a trans man and getting pregnant, which basically is a documentary about a female having a baby, but it's a documentary because of the identification. This is the manipulation of the language that we're seeing happening in so many things. So rather than saying castrating and chemicalizing young children, we call it gender affirmation because it sounds so much better. We need to understand how the culture is manipulating the language to the point where we can't even define the basics like woman.
Another thing that came up in that chat with Jan Rivers is that also included in the new wording is the whole gender thing.
Yeah, it comes up here under women and gender diverse people they serve with whānau in communities. I mean, at least women get back in there, but gender diverse women, they're women. If they're knocked up and they're having a baby, they're women.
We were talking in that chat that is kind of provides an on-ramp to get that in another way. And then what you're going to see in birthing clinics are rainbow flags and posters on the wall, you know, promoting all of this. And it's a way of getting it in, even if you have to tweak a few words, right?
Do you know, I've got two issues. One, I don't like kahu pokai. Kahu pokai is a made-up construct. It's not a traditional word for midwife. It's been made up because they needed to take the traditional Māori te reo genderised word out and create something that is completely new. So that it's a fiction, right? The other thing is whānau. What happens when you have got a midwife and you're working with cultures who have a very strong influence with family in terms of the care of that child, and the mother's rights are actually taken away, and she's got her mother-in-law, if she's actually in, or even father-in-law, if she's in a very patriarchal type arrangement, a very patriarchal culture, does that now mean that mother, the mother of that child, has to, and the midwife now has to navigate every single person that is perceived in that whānau? That to me is like opening Pandora's box.
Or some feel they could have a say over her.
Absolutely. Look, I just know that there are, you know, some cultures that, particularly if you're dealing with more patriarchal cultures and you are a mother and your rights as a woman are already usurped within the environment that you live in, often childbirth is the one time that you have any sense of control or power. This scope takes even that little modicum of power.
Because you're wondering who the midwife's working for.
Exactly.
All right.
That's nonsense.
Anything more to say about that?
It's not good for my blood pressure.
Well, I'm hopeful that this government will make sure that it gets changed. I am hopeful.
Yeah. Ro, again for you, Candace Owens.
Yes, I see New Zealand Herald are at it again, trying to ban a visit from someone whose views they don't like, and they're always conservative, aren't they? You know, just when they lied to New Zealand police about the Aussie journalist R.V. Yemeni to stop him coming in. But this time they're trying to deny US commentator Candace Owens from being able to get entry into New Zealand. But we find out that it's this little indoctrinated little tyrant from the young, is he president of the Young Labour Party?
Yeah, Young Labour. Yeah.
Really? Calling for her cancellation? But yeah, and I guess we all get sick of the far right label. I noticed that he compared her to Posy Parker, apparently, is also far right. I mean, Kelly J. Keene is anything but far right. But
I don't even know what far right is anymore.
No, well, it's anything that's not far left, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pretty much. But yeah, I see he's asked Erica Stanford for visible police presence and security at her events to protect vulnerable communities. Well, here's an idea, Ethan. If you don't like what she says, just don't go.
No, that's right.
Henderson. It's freaking far away from anywhere. Just don't go.
Yeah.
And don't you love how they never, ever, ever define what vulnerable means? I mean, what is vulnerable?
Whose worldview can be shattered.
No, I think it's anyone who self-identifies. It's all about that these days, isn't it?
I thought the funniest part was the last line of that open letter from the Young Labour where they said, Aotearoa is known for compassion and unity. I think that might have been missing at Albert Park for Posey. I might run that past Posey and just see what she thinks.
I can definitely tell from being there, it was not there at all. He's also asked for increased support for anti-hate initiatives. So he obviously wants Jacinda Ardern's disinformation project.
So he's bundling everything his wish list in.
Yep.
That's the ultimate gaslighting.
It is too. Yep. But the one good thing is about all of his whining is that New Zealand Attorney General Judith Collins, she gave a speech recently at the University of Western Sydney, and she said freedom of expression is recognised as one of the most fundamental rights within the Bill of Rights Act. It is therefore fundamental to a functioning democracy that all people are able to freely express their views. So we've got to have hope that this government are going to...
Yeah, but she said that the Korean War stopped Niwa from recording... temperatures and rainfall that year. So
that was a bit of a brain explosion, wasn't it?
Yeah. The interesting thing with Candace Owens is normal rules don't apply. She's African American from a poor background. I've heard her talking about her background. You know, grandfather was in cotton fields, right? And she's self-made. She's incredibly sharp. The way she talks is fantastic, and I've seen her with some heavy hitters, and she's demolished them all. That's what they're afraid of.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I just think this is just another example of why this new progressive left is so damn dangerous and why it's important that the Democrats don't win this US election, because we'll import more of their crap, the censorial crap, to New Zealand as well eventually.
How do we react if and maybe they've made their decision, I should have heard about it, if they had, it'd be a big one, big story for the week. What if they say no here? How do we react to that?
Gosh, I think there would be a big outcry. I mean, the Free Speech Union would probably be leading the charge. I don't know if they would try it again.
No, I don't think they would actually hear.
They were really showing up.
You never know.
The Yemeni's case, they were really showing up with that and just the appalling process. So, I honestly don't think that Erica Stanford would agree to this. I hope I'm correct.
Yeah, okay. But if they banned it, I'd be furious.
Well, the other thing they do is they
have a fit.
They do what they did with Lauren Southern and Stephen Molyneux, is that they let them into the country and then abrogate the power and close the venues. So that's the other option that they'll do, or play. I wonder whether people's patience and tolerance for this sort of behaviour is actually starting to wear a little bit thin now. Mm. You know, but back when they did it to Lauren Southern and Stephen Molyneux, which was, what, 5-6 years ago? It's a while ago now that they did that. Yep. And even Don Brash prior to that, I think people were kind of like, oh, okay, all right. And they're like, oh, it's just a one-off type deal. But now it's becoming more and more prevalent in, I think they're seeing censorship. I think normies, you know, those that the go-alongs to get-alongs, are actually sort of seeing this for the absolute bollocks that it is, and are sort of going, nah.
Yeah, and also too that when they call people far right, everyone goes, oh, they're just normal.
Yeah.
Because everyone's far right now. So, I don't think it works as effectively anymore.
The media pushing, against Candace Owens, in their dreams they could have as many people visiting their website as Candace Owens gets, videos and everything every week or month. And their audience and business model is crumbling. You'd think they'd wake up and think, oh, maybe it's not such a good idea to have a go at Candace Owens. This could push our demise, even faster. But they don't.
Yeah, I think that's been the interesting thing, is that there's a lot more chatter about Candace Owens, whereas she was going to come into the country and it was targeted at a select group that they were targeting on Facebook. Now everybody's heard the name, and so that's just increased the interest. So, what's that called? The Cinderella effect or something?
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened
with Streisand.
Streisand effect, sorry, yeah.
Named after Barbara Streisand. I don't know.
Yeah, so many more people Googled who Posey Parker was after the fiasco, with the media kicked up about her. And I had so many coming to me going, oh, my God, I agree with everything she says. I'm like, yep, that's why you can't trust the media.
Yeah, the good thing is that Shania Lull has sort of disappeared into Parliament's precinct, so you won't have him winding up the audience. So they'll have to find someone else to wind up people. Not sure who that will be. John Campbell, maybe?
Well, he might be looking for a job.
Yeah, or Paddy Gower.
Oh, David Ferrier, there would be one.
They could all go together.
Really raising our blood pressure.
Yeah. Maybe we should get off that now. All right. Marie, Kamala Harris versus Donald Trump. Why U.S. election is going to go down to the wire. It's a it's a piece by Shane Tupou.
Yes.
In the Herald. What's he saying?
I just laughed. I covered this with Marty yesterday, and both Shane and Andrea Vance have managed to get themselves little junkets across for the election. Now, Andrea's being sponsored by the U.S. Embassy, bless her little heart, and she's been doing a little sort of tour of the suburbs of Pennsylvania. Now, the nice thing is they both kind of identified that this is going to get won or lost. Predominantly, I think it comes down to four states. It comes down to Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and North Carolina. But I think all roads lead to Pennsylvania. I don't know. I see you nodding, Bob. I think that's where it's
Philadelphia. Philadelphia is the other one.
Well, Philadelphia is the city, the biggest city in Pennsylvania.
Oh, right. So that's, because that's the city that they're really watching. They've said that that's the really turning point.
Yep. So where Andrea is, and she's actually got a good nose for this, is she's actually hanging around in the outer suburbs of Philadelphia. Now, I have actually spent some time in a very wealthy, leafy suburb of Philadelphia in my youth, and we're talking big, grand palatial homes and lawns and the things that you would see in some of the very best suburbs here in New Zealand. And what you would normally see is pretty much very democratic, lots of bunting and the little sort of signs on the lawn and all the rest of it. What Andrea has been quite stunned by as she heads into the burbs of Philadelphia is that the popularity for Trump and Vance is not only more widely seen, but people are literally putting stakes in the ground, putting the lawn signs out, they're buying the T-shirts, and they're openly campaigning for that Republican candidate. And that's not something that you've seen in those sorts of suburbs since Ronald Reagan. So she's now sort of over there going, ooh. And then meanwhile, Shane, with his mate Punter, who doesn't quite share the same politics as himself, he's doing a tour of diners and dive bars, and we'll pop in a column if he remembers and he's sober enough. So, and I think at least he's getting down with the people, and a lot of people that he's talking to. Initially, he was, I think, in New York, I think he said, and there is a swing. There's definitely a swing. And looking at those two commentators, you can see, I could see as you were reading the columns, that this amazement that they had, because you've only been dining on a diet of democratic dross that we have in this country, well, of course, you won't realise.
Yeah, but aren't they curious, Marie?
They are curious, Paul, but this is the problem. You know, when you've been living in an echo chamber, which they have been, they get over there believing that the echo chamber that they've been living in, what they've been fed here in this country almost exclusively through the New York Times and the Washington Post, is actually what people think. And they get over there on the ground and suddenly realise that, it's not quite like that.
Well, when you look at him at McDonald's and just in the last day or so pulling up in a garbage truck to comment on Biden's garbage comments.
Gold. Absolute gold.
I mean, who thinks of these things?
And to pull that off so quickly, and more than that, in his speech in Green Bay in Wisconsin after he'd gotten into the garbage truck, that humanity, this is a campaign between identity of the Democrats and the humanity of the Republicans. And Trump's team have been brilliant in playing into that humanity. He's making a joke at himself at trying to get, you know, I mean, at 70, whatever he is, to try and, to lever himself up into this very large dump truck and not literally not make an
and
ass
drive
of himself.
Was he driving? It looked like he'd just driven up in it.
Well, it is, we only drove it a few feet and then we got out.
It was absolutely brilliant, wasn't it, Marie?
It was very clever.
I'm sitting there and all that media, if I make a mistake or have a little stumble trying to get into this truck, they're going to take that.
Well, CNN crossed to it live.
Yeah.
So the CNN TDS software has got it both barrels.
And then the funniest thing to cap it all off is he's standing there in his high-vis and he's saying, where's my suit? I want to get my suit on. And his team's saying, no, we want you to go up there in the high-vis. He's I don't know. And then he said, but they played to his vanity. So he made a joke about his vanity when they're saying, but it makes you look slimming. Oh, the head made makes me look thin, you know. So it's that humanity, that humour.
I saw an interview with one of his sons, and his sons, was it Don Jr., was describing how he used to take them to construction sites because they had lots going on. And first of all, he had a great rapport. I'm not promoting Trump here. I'm just saying something I heard. He had a great rapport with all the tradies, right, and was on first-name terms with quite a few because he'd used them over and over again. But he would, the detail he went to, like he wanted to know that the nails were going in straight. And if anything looked slightly on the wrong angle, he'd notice it. The detail is what he seems to be able to deal with, I think.
I think the funny thing is that there's a meme going around now where it shows Trump working at McDonald's and working on the garbage truck. And the line is, the economy is so bad under Kamala that most families have to have two jobs now. And I thought it was just some great trolling.
Though Robert Kennedy Jr. might not have been a fan of Macca's.
No, but I mean, at the same token, this is, I think, the brilliance between the Trump campaign, Trump Vance versus Harris Waltz, is with Harris Waltz, and when you look at all the Democratic candidates over the last, I don't know, 20 odd years, right? There's been a degradation with every single one. So the one following on from the next one has just been that wetter and that a bit worse. And when you look at Tim Walz compared to Kamala Harris, I mean, you couldn't put anybody next to her that would outshine her. So,
no, that's a good point.
Honestly, where they found him, good grief. So, okay, that aside.
AI found him.
Yeah, indeed. And then you look at the Trump campaign. I mean, look, I've always been a bit hot and cold with Trump. I really have, to be honest. But the humanity I've seen displayed from him since that assassination attempt has impressed me. And it's the team. J.D. Vance, I've said it again, I'll say it again, I love J.D. Vance. I've read his book. I think he's a tremendous career ahead of him. Love him. The fact that RFK is now there, that sets some balance. It also, in a way, I think is an atonement from Trump around the COVID. He knows he got COVID wrong, so many things in COVID wrong. And I think that in a way, is his way of atoning to a lot of people on that. Vivek Ramaswamy, he's as sharp as a tack, very bright, business and many other elements. He's very, very talented. Tulsi Gabbard, I would love to see as the first female American president. I think she would be amazing. And I could go on. You know, it's the team. It's not just
even
one man.
Even Naomi Wolf has endorsed him now.
Oh, has she?
Yeah.
I never thought I'd see the day.
It really is a unity party, right? It's what Brett Weinstein years ago was trying to create with his unity movement. It's actually finally come off. And you know, you've got to give credit to Trump for actually pulling it together.
Yeah, totally.
Or maybe you should give credit to Kamala for pulling it together because everyone's so scared that she'll win.
Can you imagine what it could be like? Oh.
Makes you shudder.
I listened to this really interesting debate on the Free Press with
Barry Weiss.
Barry Weiss, yeah. It was
so good.
Ken Shapiro and Sam Harris. And it was really interesting. Like, I do not know and understand why the left deem themselves so bloody morally superior. Like, it's the thing that makes my skin crawl most of all. Sam Harris at one point insinuated that many Trump voters are low information voters.
Oh, yeah.
I said the low information voters, the garbage, the deplorables. Like, who do these
That's
people
That's a real insult.
That is. It's incredibly insulting.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, Sam Harris is somebody who's always been on the very top shelf with the pom-poms of the inside of his own anus, so
he's
I take
confused.
A lot of what he has to say to
them. He's confused. Yeah.
He definitely has Trump derangement syndrome, because on that debate, he basically just said anyone but Trump. You know, he didn't even rate Harris at all. He didn't give her much credit whatsoever. It was all just opposition to Trump.
I don't feel so bad about talking about herpes now after that comment, Marie.
Staying with this, coverage of Trump-Harrison presidential race, most lopsided in history, 85% negative for Trump. It's a Fox News report, Bob. No surprises there.
Well, it's actually, it's in the Fox News, but it's by the Media Research Centre. They analysed it. I mean, we've done these analyses on social issues in New Zealand as well. Harris gets 78% positive coverage since July on the three main ABC, CBS and NBC. I mean, are you surprised? 78% positive coverage. Trump gets 85% negative coverage. I just think that this sort of is bouncing back in their face now, because what it's doing is racking up people, because they actually are getting sick of being one delivered the wrong information. But now you've actually got key people in the media actually admitting it. And of course, Jeff Bezos wrote an article for the Washington Post. So Washington Post, like the New York Times, far left newspaper, I mean, if they endorsed anybody other than a Democrat, that would be the news, not the endorsement. But they decided that they were going to not endorse who the president was going to be, who they were backing. Everyone knew it was going to be Harris. In fact, the intel is that they'd already written the article. But Jeff Bezos is the owner of the Washington Post. And he said, nope, we're not going to. And he wrote an article backing up an opinion piece backing up why he wasn't going to do it. It was entitled "The Hard Truth: Americans Don't Trust the News Media." I'll just read this, the key bit. It says, we must be accurate. We must believe to be accurate. It's a bitter pill to swallow, but we're failing. Most people believe the media is biased. Anyone who doesn't see this is paying scant attention to reality, and those who fight reality lose. Reality is an undefeated champion. And so he's basically wanting to raise the level of the credibility of a newspaper that I think's already lost it. Pew Research also came out with a poll, some research just in the last week or so, where they found that Americans' trust in mass media has dropped to just 31%. Now, that's exactly the same figure as New Zealand through the AUT report. So you've got this widespread distrust in the media, and yet rather than them trying to prove that we can trust them, they're just digging deeper. And I mean, I watched, unfortunately, I do it as part of my work research, not because I would choose to, but I watched Three News or Stuff's News. And the night before, when the garbage was used by the comedian in one line of a 4-hour show with a massive crowd at Trump rally, it was the news. And they were going around doing vox pops with individuals and
even
laughing about the fact that Trump at the exact time that the comedian had said this joke about Puerto Rico, apparently Kamala had just walked into a cafe, and guess what? It was owned by a Puerto Rican. I mean, they were just so excited about it.
Interesting to see how they report on Biden's garbage comment.
Well, they didn't. They didn't. Last night, there was not a single whisper of Biden's garbage comment.
I can tell you what they did. I can tell you what they did. The White House, in the, what do they call it, the readout or the text out of what he said, transcript.
They put a comma in.
Took the comma out. Yeah. And put the comma on the end. So he was referring to one person. And then they're trying to say, no, that referred to the person's only fan or something. Incredible.
The only thing good about this is they are becoming vastly irrelevant, aren't they? You look at Joe Rogan's interview with Donald Trump. I don't know if any of you listened to it. It was an incredible interview. His depth of knowledge over a range of subjects was amazing. And it's had over 30 million views.
No, probably closer to 40 now. And it's the humanity, though, bro. That's what I got. You know, I mean, my favourite section was just him riffing with Joe about sports.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, just a normal guy. You know, just chatting. And and Kamala refusing to do that, I think, huge mistake.
Well, laid down rules, right?
But she's just not capable of having a coherent conversation, even a short one, pre-recorded. They have to edit it.
And I think they are, as we speak, are interviewing J.D. Vance, so that'll probably come out tomorrow, I'm picking. So, you know, and he's really sharp. I mean, that I'm really looking forward to that conversation.
Is that Joe Rogan interviewing J.D. Vance?
Joe Rogan, yeah. So instead of Kamala Harris, Joe Rogan said, fine. He put the invitation out to J.D. and J.D. said, yeah, I'll be there.
Kamala said that she would do the interview, but Joe had to go to her and would only do an hour because that's as long as she can concentrate or something. So, incredible. Yeah.
And when you see that she took all that time off to prepare for the debates or prepare for any of the interviews she's done, she's had time off to prepare for those. I mean, Trump's had, what, 56, 57, and might even be getting close on 60 days without a day off?
Yeah.
At 70, whatever he is, you know?
Eight.
I think we went back to our interview right to another event, didn't he?
Yeah, like, he did.
He just, yeah. Maybe it's the not drinking. I have been thinking, like, you know, maybe I should give up the wine because he is so onto it.
You need to
he doesn't
to
smoke, he
Coke
doesn't
Zero.
Drink, he doesn't take drugs.
Coke Zero and McDonald's, apparently. But I can't believe you guys are so, you know, enamoured with Hitler. I mean, what makes you think you should vote for Hitler?
Oh, look, it's sort of ironic that he's being labelled a white supremacist, but he's predicted to get the Republicans the best result amongst blacks and Hispanic voters for like 60 years.
That's because those people coming over the border are taking those jobs. It's decimating the economic opportunities for big sections of the population.
And also, too, they're also perpetrating a lot of crime in the areas where those people live. And I'm sorry, they want to live safe, peaceful lives like anybody else. And they can't do it.
I think the Democrats have also taken the working class and ethnic minorities for granted for years, right? They pander to them come election time, handing them out some little breadcrumbs like, oh, you'll vote for us because, you know, we're the Democrats.
Then they screw them.
Yeah, then they absolutely screw them. So I'm really hoping they're in for a big, rude awakening.
I thought the interesting, funny part also was the fact that they were saying that because Trump spoke in New York at Madison Square, that was where Hitler had held a rally in the 30s, and so therefore he was just... He was mirroring Hitler, but of course, where Kamala Harris held her rally yesterday was where the Ku Klux Klan had held a rally as well. But nobody seemed, the media didn't pick that up. Actually, they were saying 75,000 at Hillary's thing last night, at Kamala's thing last night, and I was looking at the crowd. I've actually been to that park, it's right next door to the White House. Massive field. You would not get 75,000 on that field, and in fact, the field wasn't full. So I checked to see where did the figure come from, the 75,000. Oh, it was from the Kamala campaign. So the media literally just copied a figure. I mean, you just if you can just Google image of Kamala rally crowd, and you'll see about 15 toilets, portable toilets around the outside of the field. That gives you an idea that there weren't 75,000 people there.
That wouldn't deal with 75,000 people, would it? Wouldn't like to be the portal.
But aren't all of her campaign events, they're all invite only. No one can just, you know, go rock up and go. They're all invite
it's
only.
It's so manufactured then, isn't it?
Yep.
So manufactured. Incredible. Okay, why did John Key endorse Donald Trump? That was a piece by Simon Wilson. Few people have been commenting on that piece, Marie.
Yeah. You know, I'm a bit like Bob. I avoid things as much as I can. But every now and then you've got to take one for the team. You've got to take that hit. And for me...
Thank you.
Sucking a lemon and reading Simon Wilson this week was it for me. And I reminded myself why I have a very strong Wilson diet and I don't go there because this will be enough to last me for another year, I'm sure. So Simon had a bit of a twofer, really. I mean, he was able to take a stab at John Key and a stab at Donald Trump. So, I mean, for him, it was a big week. He is not fond. He's not fond. And he literally spent the entire column rattling off every single Democratic trope that he'd obviously gotten out of the talking points that had been issued by the campaign. And how dare John Key think that the Trump campaign was better for the economy? Because according to things like a modelled Goldman Sachs report, Kamala Harris was going to be better for the economy. And I don't know about you guys, but one thing I've learned during COVID, I don't trust a modeller.
No, never. A modeller.
You know, and it was just dripping with absolute condescension and frustration. And I think, again, the likes of Simon Wilson and his ilk are actually too afraid to admit they're staring down the barrel of this cultural shift now. People are waking up. They're not drinking. They're not under the hypnosis like they were for the last 5 years. And they're actually suddenly realising that unlike 2016, I'm getting a strong whiff of 2016 again, where you have them believing that, no, we're going to take this, but actually we're not going to take this. And what Trump has gone and done is he's gone and beat them at their own game again. In 2016, he did it with Cambridge Analytica and targeted social media postings in key battleground states. This time around, he's just looked at the mainstream media and he said, I'm not even going to bother trying. And he's gone and spent all of his time and all his efforts in alternative media to reach the people. And you've got like guys like Simon Wilson, who was sitting in his nice little legacy media space going, But no, you know, you can't be doing that. And anybody that doesn't think that our, you know, excrement doesn't smell is on the wrong side of history. And yeah, and I think
did you ever see his interview with Jordan Peterson when Jordan Peterson came here about 3 or 4 or 5 years ago?
No, I hear it was bad though.
Jordan Peterson wrapped around his little finger big time. He had no answers, did he? It was brilliant.
But it appeared to me that he always thought during the interview that he was the alpha male. No, you're not. I'm sorry.
One thing I want to say that's different from 2016 and 2020 in America is that people used to be embarrassed to say that they were Trump supporters. Like there was a small group that were really, really vocally supportive, but everyone else was very quietly supportive. And I remember listening to a guy that does polling, and he said like they had to ask questions in a way that people wouldn't feel like they outed themselves as Trump. Now people are out there loud and proud that they support Trump, and they do not give a shit what the media thinks, what their neighbours think. They're like, nah, this is the right thing for America. And that is a huge turnaround.
And that's really what Andrea Vance was talking about in her column. And that's what she couldn't believe, is that that's what people were doing. It's like it wasn't this dirty little political secret anymore. And that people were actually realising too that I think the threat of cancellation that you could have had for supporting Donald Trump is not quite so prevalent now. No.
I was actually in Washington, D.C. the week that Biden stepped down and Trump got shot. So it was sort of around that same time. And so there was a whole lot of walking around Washington, D.C. They sell all these political stuff. And like you say, there was a whole lot of Biden-Harris material that was no longer usable because the pairing was over. And the other thing was that there was just Trump material everywhere. People were buying it in their hordes. They were wearing it in public. So there has been that turning point. Now, that's the thing you got to take into account for comparing the polling, is that in previous years, pollsters have found it hard to get people admitting they're voting for Trump. The argument, so like back in 2016, apparently in these marginal seats, Trump was about 16 points behind, and yet he won them.
Yeah.
Now, the question now is, are the polls underrating Trump still, or are people just being braver in their answers? The pollsters are arguing that people are being braver, so therefore it is still very close.
I reckon it's a mix. I think it's a bit of both.
Yeah. Interesting enough.
Let's finish up on this, because this is from your McBlog again, Bob. New Zealand media's TDS follows on from this short case study. Okay, well, basically we've been talking about TDS in the media here just now, but broaden that out. I've always tried to get into the mind of a TDS sufferer, you know, what triggers that derangement, and I haven't felt like I've got there yet.
Trump derangement syndrome is a mental condition in which a person has been driven effectively insane due to their dislike of Donald Trump to the point at which they will abandon all logic and reason. So basically, think CNN, One News, you know, basically most of the New Zealand media.
Simon
Wilson. Yeah. And it was just related. I just basically did a short case study, and it was that coverage of Donald Trump dancing at a rally. So they mocked him and said, you know, here he was dancing to music, and he dared to dance to YMCA. In fact, I heard this commentary about it yesterday. In fact, Barry Soper on News Talk ZB was just going off at Trump. He really hates him. And he was using this example, ironically, and how Trump had danced to, you know, YMCA, which is a gay anthem.
He's been doing that for years.
Exactly.
10 years.
That's 2016.
So anyway, he does this dance-a-thon. And, of course, when you actually read into it, you find that he actually stopped halfway through a Q&A, a town hall, because someone had a medical event. So he said, well, hang on, let's stop. Let's focus on getting that person treatment. They got back into it. And then another person had a medical event. So he stopped again and he said, you know what? I'm sick of this Q&A. Let's just listen to some music, have some karaoke and have some fun. There's so much joy and fun in the Trump campaign, and it's all very serious and nasty in the Kamala campaign, which is kind of ironic with what Kamala was telling us that it was all about. But
you mean joy? She said it was all about joy.
Jacinda Ardern's kindness, right?
Yeah. But it was just an example of where the media just went with this narrative that it was weird and creepy that he did this dancing, and yet here he was actually stopping And I actually just, in my blog, I just mentioned the fact that one time I was in church and a person fainted and collapsed and needed medical help. And the preacher, this was about 40 years ago, preacher just carried on as though the whole priority was the sermon and nobody gets in the way of the sermon. And so everyone's ducking around trying to get this person out of the pews and out the back of the church. And I thought to myself, I never want to be in a situation where we don't care for the person over the over the narrative that's being pushed. And and yet this is what the media did. They were saying, oh, Trump was weird because he stopped doing pushing his narrative to care for people in the audience. I think, like, if you listen to Joe Rogan's interview, you actually find out that he's a real person who's been completely misrepresented. And I just give him credit that he's put up with the BS for so long.
And also, Kamala Harris, she had a rally with a whole bunch of doctors out there endorsing her. There was someone in the crowd that had a medical event, and all the doctors stood on the stage looking up to see if there's the doctor in the room.
Well, there was abortion doctors, that's why.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah. Right. They oh, they take life, not save it. Yeah. Okay, yeah. All right. Good to know.
It's pretty rare you get that at a rally. Yes, they didn't anticipate any work there. All right, but TDS is going to strike big time really soon. Get ready.
The one serious thing about it is that, like, some of the rhetoric around Trump, it does, like, there are a lot of mentally ill people around in the States, right? And a lot of them have guns. And what it does, it's a bit like the Posey Parker calling her a Nazi and far right. It enables people, it gives them, like, they feel like they have license to do something really bad to those people, because if they're Nazi, then you've got to kill Nazis, right? Because they're really, really bad. So I just, this rhetoric is really dangerous. And I mean, I know Trump's protection now is just like mind boggling how much security he has.
Yeah, what would he have had at McDonald's?
Yeah. But he's also got family as well. Like, there's other ways to get to him. I just really hope that. That doesn't happen again. But, yeah, I will never forget. I think that will stay in my mind always when he stood up and said, fight, 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 after getting shot. Like, that is courage, right? Strength and courage. And that's what America needs.
Or
elite.
The ultimate entertainer.
Oh, and that as well.
Seizing the moment, you know.
Yeah. And I was talking to Trevor Loudon the other week, and, you know, amongst those conservative circles, they are really seriously worried about a backlash. And then you have Kamala Harris stoking that Nazi rhetoric. Ooh. And Biden, you know, even with the garbage rhetoric, and they're saying that he is going and Trump is going to do all of these executive orders. He's going to use federal power to overpower and change things. And they're painting
doing what they're doing, in other words.
Yeah, as a dictator. And so, of course, it's only going to take the very, very slightest spark if he were to win to set them off. Like, I think, like BLM riots on steroids, but they won't call that an insurrection, of course. That will be a peaceful, fiery but peaceful protest, I'm sure.
Yeah, no one's opening up the doors and saying, come on, have in for a tour in those situations.
No.
I listened to one commentator say that he reckoned if Trump won the election, the rates of mental illness in the US would skyrocket. Absolutely.
Pfizer to the rescue.
Yeah, because Democrat supporters just cannot get their heads around the fact that he could win and govern them again.
I mean, well, reminds me of this huge sort of mass hypnosis. I mean, I know we've talked about formation and all of that, but it's like there's those real TDS sufferers, because they are suffering, it's like they've been hypnotized. Like, they're the hypnotized bunch, right? And you've got, what, keywords that probably set them off, you know?
The irony is that if Trump does win next week, you'll be able to hear the wailing and screaming from most newsrooms around the country. But the interesting thing is that once they recover and had their therapy, they're actually going to love it, because they'll be back to doing what they did for 4 years previously about Russian collusion and about what he's tweeting from the toilet at 3 a.m. and how many Cokes he's had. And, I mean, they'll actually love it. The media actually loves Trump's.
Lots of clicks.
Yeah, all these stories.
All right. It's going to be a fascinating week and a fascinating couple of months, because there's the ride is not over on the 5th, is it? It's inauguration is the thing, and anything could happen there.
Yeah, well, you've got two months of no man's land, and lot can happen in 2 months.
Counted first, right? They're already having problems. They've admitted to problems with the Dominion voting machines already, so who knows?
Well, Steve Bannon says this has to be such a huge victory that the surge in voting for Trump has to overcome the cheating and the sleights of hand. So that's a big ask, isn't it? That's a big ask. He's going to have to. He's going to have to take it in a landslide.
Yeah,
I would have thought. All right, we've come to the end of our political panel. I want to thank Ro Edge. Thank you, Ro.
Thank you for having me yet again.
Bob McCoskrie. Thank you, Bob.
You're all good. I might come back depending on the result next week.
Okay. Well, you're threatening to leave New Zealand. What about those people who threaten to not do something if Trump wins? Like, I'll leave the country.
I'll never do this again.
Oh, as long as they don't come here.
Bono, of course. Bono is one of them. A couple of actors. Of course they won't.
Yeah. As if anybody cares.
Yeah, that's the other point. And Marie Buskey. Thanks, Marie.
You're welcome, Paul. Anytime.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.